Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Tonight on Mythic Physique, Quest for Optimal Wellness, I am proud to bring you Fury and Strength with Ryan Foley. Greetings and welcome, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm looking forward to your presentation tonight. You have a lot of really interesting things jumbled together.
I certainly hope so. It's kind of one of those things, I kind of hate to mention this right off the bat, but Oklahoma, that's where I'm located for your listeners, we're ranked pretty darn low on the scale when it comes to the number of people that have been vaccinated in our state. And I know that the amount of people being hospitalized and things like that are starting to creep back up again. So I'm really hoping that that we're going to stay out of another shutdown, which I'm afraid we may be heading into. And I certainly hope not, because things have been going really well for me here recently. And a lot of that is due to the fact that I'm starting to incorporate a lot of science back into my workouts.
Awesome.
I feel like there for a little while, we had all come across that COVID slump that we got caught in, especially during the shutdown. And because of the changes that were brought into effect, I'm not entirely certain. I guess it would be within the tax code or whatever they decide that those rules are that go through that allowed me to apply for different health insurance. And because of my income levels and things like that, I was able to get health insurance for the first time since the Affordable Care Act came in that didn't have me with just a nightmarish deductible. And so I went through and I had an annual checkup, which I've been neglecting for a few years. But so I went through and went to see the doctor and all that sort of stuff. And so it was the first time really that I stepped on the scales because they had to, in order to set up a new chart. And so I had gained back what I had, we had affectionately called the quarantine 15. For me, it was the quarantine 19. But so because of that, that was a kick in the butt, that I really needed. I was thankful that I came out from it. With a little bit of motivation. And so as a result, I've already, dropped 12 pounds just by going through and making, little changes here and there, stuff like that. But because of, going in to see the doctor for the first time, stuff like that, my blood pressure was a tad elevated. So they were concerned about that. And so they were wanting me to go through and monitor my blood pressure. So after 3 weeks after that, we got test results back and blood work and things like that. And they're really happy with the majority of stuff that they've seen. The blood pressure started to go back down. And so I think it was just the fact that I was in there afraid that the doctor was going to find something, be it, cancer or whatever, just because you've been avoiding it for so long.
Right.
But so in going through and doing things like that, so it brought some certain things to light for me. And then I've also started to go through and implement more of a bit of a science back into my workouts to really to kind of rein in everything and keep everything really tight. So one of the things that I thought was really interesting, so I was going through and I was taking my blood pressure at a fairly regular basis. And so, again, one of the things that I've always stressed here on your show is that bodybuilding is, in fact, a very legit science. I know that people, that are on the outside looking in, it's easy for them to be, for bodybuilders to be dismissed as scientists. Oh, they're big, strong guys that are in there, picking up weight and setting it back down. But really, once you start to get into the true science of bodybuilding, where it's you're going to perform this exercise for this many sets and this many reps with this much intensity, and that's going to go through and that's going to develop the type of physique that you want to build. So as a result, you have to know what your goals are and what you want to do to be able to move forward to obtain those goals. So I was going through and again, just because I was curious, I would go through and I would take my blood pressure before I would go and work out. And then I'd go and I'd do the workouts. And so I assumed that whenever I came back, my blood pressure would be increased. But strangely enough, I would go and I would work out. And then my gym is roughly about a 15-minute drive away. So let's call it 20 minutes between, you know, shutting down and packing up and coming back home. And what I found is that after my workouts, my blood pressure actually dropped significantly because of all that hard work that I was going for. So I know it seems almost counterintuitive to think, oh, wow, really? So, you know, your blood pressure goes down as a result of all that hard work. So that's one of the things that I'm hoping we can go through. The doctor said, because of the numbers that I was presenting and at the second time that I was there, he said he didn't want to put me on blood pressure medicine unless I absolutely wanted to. And I absolutely did not, because I understand that's a bit of a lifetime commitment once you start going through and trying to medicate it. So by going through and doing that, by going through and dropping the weight, I figure that's kind of one of the things that will help lower it a little bit more. But so I went through and bought this a cuff, you know, that's attached to a machine, so that way I could track my blood pressure here at the house. And so the thing is, so I'm a big advocate of constantly monitoring my heart rate, especially when I'm working out, to make sure that I'm getting to the level that I need to. And so this is after, you know, 30 minutes post-workout, that cuff that I had would allow me to track, you know, the two numbers that they have there in the blood pressure, but then it would also register my heart rate. And so my resting heart rate, you know, typically averages around 70 beats per minute, but even 30 minutes after that post-workout, my heart rate, you know, would register, you know, somewhere a little bit more than 100 beats per minute. So by going through and lifting these weights and, you know, doing resistance training, it's one of those things, once you, even after you come away from the gym, your body is still going to go through and continue that metabolic burn. So that's one of the advantages of going through and lifting weights as opposed to just doing something like straight cardio. So that's why I always advocate for people, you know, if you really want to get in there and lose weight, then you have to go through and hit those weights.
Right.
So in going through and studying this, I noticed one of the numbers that was on my reports was my BMI, which is your body mass index. And so based on that, now granted, I don't know what all goes into this ranking and stuff like that, but on my report, my BMI was listed as 36. And so basically any number, they say any number that's north of 30 is considered to be obese. And so I do understand how that can affect someone psychologically, where they go through and they look at that. But all they really base it on is your height and your weight, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So in going through and studying this, I was like, okay, something about this just doesn't feel right. And so I went through and I punched in what is essentially the listed numbers. I'm not entirely certain how accurate they are, but I went through and I listed the numbers of two of my favorites that are out there, which is John Cena and The Rock. And according to the statistics of the height and weight that they have listed publicly, The Rock is considered obese because with his numbers, he was listed at like 30.8. So just based on that body mass index alone, The Rock is obese. And I don't think any doctor in the right mind would look at him and say, hey, you might need to lose some weight, Tubby, you know? So it's kind of one of those things, the BMIs and the scales, I don't think are an accurate representation of our health, because, you know, they're not going through and they're not accounting for, you know, the muscle mass that we have and things like that. So it was here a few weeks ago, my dad was in town. And so I was going through and I was explaining to him, this was in the middle in between. So I had gone to see the doctor the first time around, but I hadn't gone for the second time for all the blood work and stuff like that. And so I just, you know, I told him roughly what was going on. And so for just a little bit of backstory, my dad is he's in the Swimming Hall of Fame for being an All-American water poloist. Yeah. So it's, clearly, the athletic genes, they skip a generation in the Foley bloodline.
I wouldn't say that. So, you're very athletic with weightlifting.
It took me 37 years to find my sport, you know, but it's so for me, it's less a competition against someone else, but more a competition against myself. And that's where I find that I really thrive, you know? So Dad played water polo, which for your listeners, if you don't know, it's basically soccer, but you're swimming and you can't touch the bottom of the pool. So it's for psychopaths. It's for people who just enjoy pain to jump in and say, yeah, we'll play soccer while swimming. But so Dad has this very long and lean body, which so he's always had that swimmer frame. You know, and so I told him my weight, and you know, he made the dad noise that they make, the whoosh, oh man, you know, your number's that high, holy cow, that's crazy. But then, you know, but, and not to sound like that, I'm knocking my dad, because granted, he's 75, so it's, you know, he's a little bit, you know, he's getting older now, but it's kind of one of those things where I think his legs are about as big around as my arms. You know, so it's because I've been seeing him here lately, and it's like, Dad, I don't know, Dad, you might want to think about putting on some weight, because he seems, you know, fairly skinny to me. But so that's where I have to go through, and I had to start, you know, I keep in mind, you know, I have 17.5-inch biceps, and I have a 50-inch chest, which is, it eternally condemns me to a 2XL shirt unless I can go through and somehow get that shrunk down. But, you know, I like that. I like my broad shoulders. I like my back. You know, I want to keep that. I'd love to get rid of some fat, but I want to go through and continue to maintain, you know, my muscle mass. So in being honest with these evaluations, it's one of those things where I think you do have to kind of, you have to kind of chunk the scale. You have to go through and get rid of those, or not pay quite so much attention to those BMI calculators. Because if they're saying that The Rock is obese, then clearly they're not taking all these different factors into consideration.
No.
And so this is one of those things, you know, we've seen the pictures where they do side-by-side comparisons of people, but they weigh exactly the same. But, you know, it's so they get into fitness, you know, so they're building this muscle, which is, of course, going to weigh more than fat. So they look a lot better, but at the same time, you know, they're weighing the same. So that's where I think it's best for people psychologically to not worry so much about that body mass index and worry so much about the amount on the scale, as opposed to how your clothes are fitting and, more importantly, how you feel about your appearance whenever you're going through and starting a new program.
I would agree. And I stopped weighing myself on a regular scale years ago when I discovered that. You know, I go by the tightness of my clothing and where it's tight. So if my chest is tight and I've been working out and it's looking good, then that's a good thing, you know. And if my belt,
right, exactly,
and my pants are loose, then that's a good thing, you know. So I tend to judge more by things like that these days than by what the weight says, because like you had discovered, that's deceptive, because I'm heavier because I lift weight. Yes, I could stand to lose a few pounds, but that the actual number of what I weigh isn't a problem in any way. It's an illusion.
Exactly. And so in going through and studying this, one of the things, I think the reason why I lost the 12 pounds was I'm assuming a lot of that is that initial water weight, because the doctor did advise me. He said, okay, now you're probably going to start to see a slowdown. It's not like you're going to continue to lose 10 pounds, you know, every single week. But, you know, but they were just wanting to go through and really, you know, curb my diet and things like that. And they're absolutely right, because in that time of COVID, I did use food as a coping mechanism, you know, for all the stuff that was going on. And so the doctor did mention to me, he said, you know, for every pound that you lose, you're taking 4 pounds of pressure off of your knees. So unless you want to do knee surgery in the future, he would like to see me get under, he said 200 pounds.
Uh-huh.
But even looking at me, he said, that might be too skinny for you. And I was like, yeah, I think you're kind of right. And so I could understand that mentality. If I was weighing in at 300 pounds and I wasn't doing any physical activity, then yes, I do feel that knee surgeries would probably be an issue at some point down the line. but and not that he is obese in any sort of way, but there's a very popular luchador-style wrestler named Rey Mysterio, who's currently wrestling for the WWE, and he is an acrobat, an athlete in every sense of the word. Some of the stuff that he does in that ring is just, it's amazing to behold. And he did mention that while he was gone and rehabbing an injury, when he came back at one of his lighter weights that he had had. So he went from like 220 down to around 200 pounds. And as a result, he did feel like he was able to whip around the ring a little bit better. One of the things that they've talked about, especially like with Navy SEALs, they've said that if what they would have known going into training, they would have tried to shed a lot of weight because they're humping across long distances and it doesn't take a tremendous amount of physical strength to pull a trigger. So I can completely understand that if you want to do more of a body weight workout, doing more, you know, stuff like you see those parkour, you know, guys. Obviously, going through and developing a big, massive amount of muscle for them would almost be counterintuitive. It's kind of the difference between having a linebacker in the NFL who is required to overpower people with his strength versus the basketball players who are running up and down the court, and it's not so much of a contact sport. So that's why all those basketball players, they're very lean because they don't want to have to pack that heavy muscle around. So I understood what the doctor was telling me is that he wanted me to go through and drop weight in order to take pressure off the knees. But at the same time, my mentality was, okay, well, how about instead of losing weight, why don't I just make my knees stronger? So that way I don't have to worry about, so that way they're not breaking down as readily as they would be if I wasn't doing any sort of physical activity. So to go through and study all of this, I went literally to the government. So the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services has these guides that they put out. The last one that I found on the internet that was available was from 2018. But I can't imagine that the guidelines are changing that much between now and then. And so for adults, the key guidelines that they have listed is that for substantial health benefits, adults should do at least 150 to 300 minutes, so 2.5 hours to 5 hours a week of moderate intensity exercise, or they should do 75 minutes to 150 minutes a week of vigorous intensity aerobic physical activity. And so that immediately raised the next question. Okay, so what do they consider to be vigorous intensity aerobic physical activity? And then also the catch that they had in there is that we should be doing some sort of resistance training, which is the fancy way of saying lifting weights, that involves all your major muscle groups for 2 or more days a week. So I'm going through and I'm lifting weights 6 days a week, you know, pretty regularly. And so the question, so I was like, okay, so I've got the strength. I'm doing the heavy lifting I'm doing weightlifting for 6 days a week, sometimes seven. But so what constitutes vigorous intensity? So that was the question. And they didn't really have it specifically labeled. I had to go through and, you know, what defines vigorous exercise? So there's three different levels that you can go into with this to decide what constitutes as vigorous. So one is the easiest one is called the talk test. So it's probably one of the easiest ways to measure it without having any sort of special equipment. So if it's difficult to carry on a conversation, then you're probably working out at a vigorous or a strenuous pace. If you can talk fairly easily, but you know, with some breathlessness, then that's considering exercising at a moderate pace. And then if you can sing out loud, okay, then that pace is going to be too slow. So it's the thing where if you're going along and you're carrying a conversation with someone on the treadmill, that's probably not going to be considered vigorous intensity. So that's the first method is the talk test. The second one is what they call the rate of perceived exertion, and that gets shrunk down in like the books and stuff like that to RPE. So RPE is it's how difficult you consider to be something to be. So you're dealing with things like, you know, your heart rate, your breathing, the muscle fatigue, and the rate of exertion. So you put all that on a scale from 1 to 10. And so no exertion would be rated as a 1, and maximum effort would be considered a 10. But this is where it's difficult to quantify, because everyone's thresholds of pain are going to be different. You know, so what some people may consider to be a 4, someone else may consider to be a 6. But so that's a good way where you can go through, okay, well, how hard is this? And so, again, that's where you kind of start to throw back to the talk test. Basically what they're saying is that, you know, 6 or 7 is where you'd want to be at. So that's something like jogging, you know, or something. But if you're running, you know, at a full sprint, that would be considered to be an 8 or a 9. And so you want to be around a 6 or 7 for it to be considered vigorous intensity. But again, since I'm a big fan of science, the third method that you can go through and monitor this is specifically through your heart rate. And so I had been using one for a while, but I tossed it in a drawer mainly after the pandemic. And I said, okay, so we're coming out of this. I need to get back into the science of it again. So I went through and got me one of those watches that you wear that tracks your heart rate. And it's connected to my smartphone, where it can go through and it can study. I'm not getting paid for it, so I'm not shilling for anyone, you know, on this, but so the one that I got, it was, you know, fairly inexpensive. I got it at Amazon.com. And but then also the cardio machines that I use up there at the gym, they have their own heart rate monitor built into them. So I kind of balance between the two of them to see, you know, what the, you know, compare the two readings to see how close they are. And so I would say that monitoring your heart rate is probably one of the more reliable methods for measuring that exercise intensity. And so what you want to be exercising anywhere from 70 to 85% of your maximum heart rate is what qualifies as vigorous exercise intensity. And this also happens to be the same mathematical formula for burning fat. And so that it's, for me, that's really what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to burn that fat while maintaining my muscle. So what you have to do, the fat burning calculation that they do is, so you take 70% of your maximum heart rate. So so your maximum heart rate is your 220 minus your age. And so for me, I happen to be 46. So 220 minus 46 is 174, and 70% of that is 122. So as long as my heart rate stays above 122, I'm burning fat. So if I work out, you know, for an hour a day, and so I've been going through and monitoring everything. So if I work out for an hour a day, and that's a split with, say, 30 minutes of cardio and 30 minutes of lifting 6 days a week, that means I'm doing 360 minutes of vigorous exercise. And I'll even go so far as I'll round that down, because I, you know, there are going to be times where the heart rate's going to drop whenever you're going through, like if you're changing out machines or changing out plates, it's naturally going to drop. So I'll even round that down. But even rounded down, where they're asking you to go through and do 150 minutes of vigorous intensity, and I'm doing, let's call it 300, I'm still doing twice the amount that's recommended by the United States Department of Health and Human Services. So I think that's part of the reason why all those results came back at my doctor's appointment as good as they did, because I'm going through and doing these things on a fairly regular basis to make sure that I'm keeping myself elevated the way that I need to be.
Those are great tools. Back in the day, we had the President's Challenge, which continued until President Trump's presidency. He discontinued it, but it was a tool you could learn, you could use online, and you could do it by yourself, or you could set up like teams, or you could structure it any way you wanted and get people involved. And then when you reach certain milestones within a certain period of time, and you go by exercise level, what type of exercise you did, the frequency, the duration, and so forth, you could earn medals, like a bronze medal, a silver medal, or a gold medal.
Okay.
So it sounds like they've taken a lot of the frills away from it, but they still have those tools online for determining, how much you're doing in relation to how much you should be doing.
And I do think that that's where the technology has come in and the science of it all, which does make it extremely easier for you
right.
to go through and stay on track. And so I'm going through and I'm, continuing to define and develop my program. And so like some of the questions that I go through and I do get asked by people, and I've been going through and working on a series of essays for all of this. And so there's always those inevitable questions that come up. It's like, how much cardio should I be doing? How much, weightlifting should I be doing? How many reps, how many sets, all this sort of stuff. And then there's the inevitable question to which I still cannot find a decent answer for. Should you do your cardio before you're lifting or should you do your cardio after? I've got pros and cons for each. It's kind of like the same thing. They're starting to come out with medical science, which is saying that it's better to work out in the evenings than it is to work out in the mornings. But for some people, working out in the morning feels better for them.
Right.
So they're saying you should go through, and I'm not a coffee drinker. I never came across it, but they said, if you're a morning person, you like to work out in the morning, drinking two cups of coffee is going to elevate your body temperature and it's going to get your system going. And that's pretty much it bridges the gap between, the benefits that you're doing, over here by working out in the evening versus over here working out in the morning. Whenever I first got started on this journey, I went through and I was, reading all sorts of stuff, but I didn't have quite the gym IQ that I wanted to. So one of the things that I read was this, there's this supplement that you can take called CLA, and it's a fat-burning supplement. Yeah, just take this and the fat just melts off. And I was like, and I was, stupid. They said it. It's got to be true. And so I would go through and I would spend this money on this supplement. But at the end of the day, that supplement will work for you if it's going to help you get to, let's say, half a percentage point. So if you've got 5% body fat by taking that supplement, that may get you to 4.5. It's entirely possible. But if your body fat percentage is up around 20, you're not really going to notice that much. So at the end of the day, it ended up being just kind of a waste of money. And so I was like, I'm not going to take these supplements anymore. I'm going to cast those aside. And then much the same way, let me backtrack just a tad. So they've gone through and they've done scientific study, which proves, so you can go through and you can do a flat bench press where you're looking at the palms of your, or you're looking at the back of your hands. Whenever you're going through and you're doing a bench press. And then you can do that exact same maneuver, but with an incline bench press to target more of the top of the pectoral muscle. And you can do that. And again, you're looking at the backs of your hands. But they've proven that if you do a flat bench and you reverse the grip, so that way you're looking at the palms of your hands whenever you're going through and doing that bench press, that is 15% more effective than doing an incline bench press where you're looking at the back of your hands. So a 15% jump, now that's something to go through and take a look at. That's something, to seriously consider. All right, so maybe I should try doing this different version of a flat bench press as opposed to doing an incline press if I'm going to get a 15% jump. But then whenever I started going through and studying these things, you're going to see a 5% increase if you go through and you work out in the evenings. 5%, this is not – what we're doing is not the Olympics. What we're doing doesn't require, where the difference between a hundredth of a second is the difference between silver and gold. What I want everyone to go through whenever they get into these exercise routines is that I want you to enjoy yourself. Yes, it's absolutely going to hurt, and there are going to be days where you're not going to want to go up there, But eventually, once you start to get into your routine, I find that I feel worse whenever I don't go to the gym. So whenever going through and it's the decision, oh, should you do your cardio before your lifting or should you do cardio afterwards? The thing that I would bring to everyone is, what do you prefer? Because no plan is going to be perfect for everyone. Right. And I would rather you do a plan that is maybe 5% inferior to what someone else is doing, but by you going through and doing the things that you like, you're more likely to stick with that program. And any program that you do, even a bad workout, is still better than staying at home, staying in bed, right, or, you know, staying on the couch. So to me, it's kind of one of those things. That's where you have to go through and you have to kind of tailor your workouts to what works best for you. So for me, being, you know, north of 250 pounds right now, sprinting is not really my thing. I know everyone's HIIT, H-I-I-T, high intensity interval training. So they're saying this is something that you can do. Oh, and if you do this, it's going to torch fat. So what you're going to do is, so you do this high intensity for say a minute, and then you bring it back down to more of a moderate level for, you know, for a minute. And then, so you're bouncing back up. So you're constantly elevating and decreasing back down. But then I went through, and again, so this is where you got to go through and you got to do your studying, where, so HIIT takes you to vigorous and then it drops you down to moderate, and it takes you back up to vigorous and then drops you back down to moderate. But so since sprinting is not really my thing, instead what I do, I call it serial killer cardio. And that's where it's a slower pace, but at a high incline. And so by going through and doing that, I never drop below that vigorous level. So that way I'm staying at that vigorous level for that 30 minutes, that entire time, which, so I'd have to have someone that's a lot smarter than me come along and explain to me why that HIIT is better, because I feel like staying at that high level is more important. And so again, this is where I've got, you know, I've got data coming through here. And so like they say for, so running at 5 miles per hour for 30 minutes is supposed to burn 295 calories. So conversely, walking at 3.5 miles per hour will burn 140 calories. Now, these were stats that were laid out by the CDC, and it's based on 154 pound person. So it's, I don't know how accurate this gets to me, but at the same time, it gave me some base numbers to start with. And mm-hmm. So what, one of the things that I do, so instead I walk at say, you know, at a 3.5 mile per hour walk, but I'll do it at a 6 incline on the treadmill. And because of that, I burned 265 calories in 30 minutes. And so I'm starting to play with that to figure out what that is. So basically, when time is not as much of a factor for me, if I go through and, you know, do a high incline but with a slower pace, I'm not completely exhausted. Where if you ask me to run for 5 miles per hour for 30 minutes, I'd be exhausted at the end of the day. Okay, so yeah, I burned 295 calories, but then after that, I'm done. I'm spent. The tank's empty. So to me, it's better to go through and do that slower pace for me and take the time to burn calories that, you know, are going to be pretty close as far as, you know, the time and things like that. And so that way I can come off the treadmill and then I'm still ready to go through and go to work on the weights. So it's been incorporating a lot of the science into my workout and going through and charting and making numbers and things like that. So what I've discovered, because, and so therein lies one of the other questions that we have to ask. So which is better? Is it better to lift weights? Is it better to lift cardio? And so, or is it better to do cardio, or is it better to lift weights? And so like this morning I went through and I decided, okay, I'm going to do a 5K. just to see if I can. And granted, it was at a slower pace, but it was at an increased elevation. And so what I found, but it was considered to be vigorous intensity by the heart rate that I maintained throughout the whole thing. And generally speaking, it's about 500 calories is what I can burn in 60 minutes. And so I had a free hour this afternoon after work. So I went through it and, again, had the watch strapped on, went through and did some more testing. And it's, again, to go through and just strictly lift weights, I'm looking at about 500 calories that I'm burning in 60 minutes worth of lifting weights. So they tend to stay pretty close to each other. And so it's the question of, if you just want to do straight cardio, you can. If you absolutely despise cardio, but you do, but if you do antagonistic sets and if you limit your rest, you can actually turn your weightlifting into a bit of an aerobic workout. And
right.
Again, you're going to go through and burn roughly about 500 calories. So it's one of those things where you have to kind of decide what to do, which is best for you. I just happen to like a split of about, you know, about 50% cardio and about 50% weightlifting, because I know I'm not going through and lifting tremendously heavy. I'm not lifting for a tremendous long time because I know I'm going to be right back at it tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, that's all very sound. And again, we're all different, and then we differ at various points in our journey in terms of what our body responds to or even needs. So it's constant experimentation, and it's awesome that you're doing that so systematically. I experiment all the time too, but I'm not as systematic about it as you are. You're very systematic.
Well, I have to say I wasn't probably after we came out of the pandemic. Once the gym opened back up, it was time for me to, you know, I wanted to take a little bit of my time and ease back into it. But as a result, what we're seeing is that I find that going through and having these goals and tracking your workouts. So the problem is that I eat a lot of the same stuff. A lot, you know, it tends to be fairly routine. And so it's like I go through and I use this watch to test my stuff. And it's like, well, okay, I did 500 calories. And, you know, oh, and tomorrow I'm going to do 500 calories. And so it's kind of one of those things. Once it becomes so repetitive, it gets to a point to me where it's not tremendously worth charting anymore because I'm pretty much doing the same thing every time. But at the same time, you know, you're supposed to be working towards these progressive overloads, which is where you're trying to go through. And okay, if you're not charting your workouts, if you did 100 pounds last week, there's probably a pretty good chance you're going to do 100 pounds this week and maybe 100 pounds after that. So you're not continually going through and improving. And so I think that's kind of one of the things that I need to do is to get back to charting, to be a little bit more scientific and rigorous about it if I want to go through and continue to do the weight loss training and things like that. So I think doing that, it gives me motivation to continue to move in the right direction.
Yep.
And
most definitely.
So, so what that, so one of the things that, that I found, so whenever I first started this journey, I was coming off of a fairly rough time in my life, but yet at the same time, I knew I wanted to be better. And I just decided, well, I've had enough. I need to go through and I need to make a change. And so it was flipping that switch. And so I said, okay, so this is what I want to do. And I think at the end of the day, it really has to be about you. It's if you go through and your motivation is, well, I'm going to get all big and swole because that's what the girlies like, and they'll like me if I'm buff. You know, I think that that motivation fades over time. And so, and if you're doing it for someone else, that doesn't quite work as well either. It's kind of like they say alcoholics. You know, they have to really hit rock bottom before they are willing to make a change in their life. And I think it's that way whenever you go through and you start a program. So it really has to be for you. But it's a terrible analogy, I know. But that's the cake, okay? So that main part of the cake has to be for you. But then you can go through and you can add things to that cake to make it even nicer. You can do the icing, you do sprinkles and all that sort of stuff. And so I do think there are times in your life where you have to sprinkle in that little bit of extra motivation. And as strange as it sounds, this is where I think hate is actually a pretty darn good motivator. So if you go through and you're feeling these, you know, these feelings of self-loathing or, oh, I don't like who I am, that anger and that hatred can get you, you can turn it into something healthy. And you can turn it into more motivation to go through. It's not necessarily going to get you in the gym, but once you're in there, maybe you get 12 reps instead of getting 10, you know, because you're driving with that anger. And so one of the things that I always said is that my little girl right now, she's 17. I've still got, you know, plenty of years. So I'm good on that. But one of the motivations that I had for me was I wanted to walk my little girl down the aisle without wheezing, you know, and without a rascal scooter on my original knees, going back to the doctor reference there, you know. Uh-huh. And I wanted to look I want to look sharp in my tuxedo, so that way when the minister asks who gives this woman, I can say I do, you know. So I always keep that in the back of my mind, you know. So like, this is what I'm doing all this for. I'm doing this so that way I can stay healthy. And many, 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 many years from now, when grandkids are in the picture, you know, I'll be there for that. So I do think it's important for you to go through and find your why. You know, it's why am I doing this? Why am I getting up at, you know, 5:30 in the morning and heading up to the gym when I could just stay in bed? So you want to go through it and you want to find your why. So it really is.
Yes, I examine that periodically. In fact, I'm examining it now. I'm going to be a grandfather very soon. And,
all right.
I'm looking at everything. You know, I even cut my hair short. It's shorter than it's been since grade school. I do that to mark completions in my life. It's an ancient custom in honor of the Theban Hercules. So I've been keeping that up for my entire life. And so it's a new time, a new chapter, a new beginning. And I look back at everything that, you know, I had already spent time trying to figure out, but looking at it to see if it's still true. And it's amazing how many things are no longer true. You know, you have different priorities. You have a different agenda. You have different desires, you know, in terms of who and how you want to be and how you want your life to be. So that's an excellent practice, and I recommend it to everyone. You know, periodically, just test your own assumptions, you know, question why you're doing things, and you'll find that a lot of things that you beat up yourself about, you won't need to, because you might not need to do that again or ever.
Right. And so I'm constantly trying to go through and find motivation. And so me being who I am and the history that I have, while I know it sounds crazy, my son sent me a video. They said, Dad, you need to watch this. And it was two people, a licensed therapist and a professional filmmaker. And they went through and they did an analysis, both from a filmmaker standpoint and from a therapist standpoint, where they did a breakdown of Captain America. And Captain America that's portrayed in the MCU, which is also extremely close to how he's portrayed in the comic books. And Cap is the type of guy that I would love to be like. You know, it's that person who is a patriot without being a nationalist, and someone who just wants the line in Captain America, the First Avenger, when Dr. Erskine asks him, do you want to kill Nazis? And Steve's response is, I don't want to kill anyone. I just don't like bullies. I don't care where they're from. And so he's the guy who wants to stand up for someone who's been bullied. And I've calmed down here. Just like, I'm getting emotional just talking about it, because it's such a great scene. And it's wonderfully beautiful. So I'm the same way. I don't like bullies. And there are two things that absolutely turn my stomach. And that's violence against women and violence against children. It's not because I didn't come from an abusive household, anything like that. You know, my mom was the type of person who taught me that women are delicate flowers. And that's how they should be treated, but also instilled me with, I grew up with Princess Leia, you know, where it's, I don't want the princess who, you know, oh, there's a pee, you know, underneath my bed, so I didn't sleep well. I want someone who's going to grab the blaster and shoot the stormtroopers. So you want that shield maiden that stand, right, that will stand beside you. But just because a woman can do something doesn't mean that she should. That's kind of my mentality. You know, it's, so you should, men should be defenders of women. That's it, you know. And so to raise your hands against another woman, to me, is it's reprehensible, and it should never be done. So I started charting on the 15th. And so a friend of mine came to me who is a genuine superhero. She is an advocate for people that are victims of domestic violence. And so just to throw just some stats out here, because I've been asking some questions. So in the United States, there are more than 10 million adults that experience domestic violence annually. One in four women and one in 10 men will experience sexual violence, physical violence, and or stalking by an intimate partner in their life, in their lifetime. 23% of women and 14% of men have experienced severe physical violence by an intimate partner during their lifetime. So when you talk about people that are victims of domestic violence, you immediately go to women as the ones being beaten up, but men do that as well. And I didn't even consider it, but as we are now seeing, you know, gay marriages, although they should just be called marriages at this point, but when we're seeing same-sex marriages, that just that they're going to invite certain elements where we're going to see more violence of men against men. But then women have been known to be violently abusive towards men as well. So they came to me because they know that I do the workouts and stuff like that. And so they said, will you be a part of this? So I'm part of a program. It's a charity walk where I can't be there for the walk itself. So I'm charting my progress. And so my goal is to do 40 miles before the actual event takes place in August. And so I started on July 15th, and I've been going through and I've been charting my progress. And as of and with today, I've done just a little over 14 miles.
All right.
So it's 35% of the way. And I said, you know, I'm going to get there before this goal. And so I'm up there, and so I'll take pictures on my phone, you know, going, okay, this is how many, you know, miles I did, and here's all this sort of stuff. And then you're supposed to do like a $40 donation, and so they've got links and stuff like that. So I haven't had a chance to go through it and put it up yet, you know. But so I'm gonna put a call out there on Facebook to, you know, hey, help, you know, donate to this cause. So it's 40 miles and $40. And so if you go through and you do that, that money goes directly to this organization that is criminally underfunded, you know. And so they said with this donation, it can help someone with domestic violence and their children. Basically, they put them up in a home. And I think they said that runs for like 2 days. So I know it doesn't seem like a whole lot, or maybe it seems like a lot by comparison. I'm not really certain. But so by going through and starting to be a part of this since July 15th, I was up there and I was doing the thing. I was doing my cardio. You know, I had finished my show on Netflix, you know, and so I was like, okay, well, this is normally about the time that I'm going to go through and shut it down. And, you know, I was at like 1.8. you know, something as far as miles, as far as time I had done. And under any other circumstances, I would have just shut it down. You know, I would have shut it down and I would have gone and started doing my weightlifting, because the whole goal is to get to that 500 calories per workout. So that way I can go through and chart and make sure that my calories in and my calories out, you know, basically if I can get to 500, that's a meal, you know? So it's like, woo, right. I can knock, you know, breakfast off my list, and I could still be at a negative. And I said, no, you know, you got to get to 40 miles, so you've got to get to a minimum of two. And that's where I dug down. And so, you know, I dug down deep to get to that level where I normally would have quit. And that's where I go through and I say, you have to find your why. And so by going through and this person asking me to be a part of this, I understand that I'm helping someone else, but
right.
at the same time, I'm also selfishly helping myself, where it's like, I'm going to get that 2 miles, but I found the strength and the endurance to continue to endure because, come on, I'm on a treadmill in an air-conditioned, you know, environment, whereas other people, they're involved in domestic disputes. So it's like, come on, sissy, you know, you can do 2 miles. And,
right.
And you know, so today I said, you know what, let's do the 5K because they have a mile walk and a 5K run, but I don't run. I too much mass. But so I'll go through and I was like, but let's see if I could go through and do it at a walking pace. And I knocked it out. And so again, I'm acquiring data, you know, so I said, yeah, well, let's figure out how many calories do we burn by doing, you know, at this incline and at this speed. And if I, you know, reduce that, can I get to 500 calories? So I was doing a little bit of both, but then at the same time, I was like, okay, so I have to do, you know, X amount of miles between here and this date. But if I go through and, hey, if I get 3 miles in today, that's going to increase that average. So by going through and finding that motivation, it allowed me to dig deeper into levels that I didn't even know that I had. But because it wasn't just me that I was walking for. And, you know, so if you can find something like that in your life, be it, I want to help someone that's a victim of domestic violence, or I want to walk my little girl down the aisle and be healthy when I do it. You know, by going through and doing that, you're fighting for something greater than yourself. And so to me,
yeah.
that is the essence of what you embody. You know, the stories that I write about with, you know, my comic book heroes and my mythological heroes, that's what these people are doing. You know, they're fighting for something greater than themselves. And
right.
so it's strange to come to this level, but to say, you know, I've never considered myself to be a hero, but I feel like in this, I'm doing a heroic thing. I'm not saying
yes,
that makes me a hero. I'm just saying I'm doing a heroic thing for someone else.
Which is what Olympian Heroic Path and the Age of Heroes and all the other things are really all about. And I would definitely consider you a champion of Olympus. Working on yourself and developing yourself, and at the same time through what you're doing, helping other people. And that is, in my book, certainly very heroic of you, and I salute you and celebrate you. And please share your progress in the Tenafly Mayor's Wellness Campaign group and in the Sword and Sandal group. There are a lot of people in those groups who believe the same and try to do the same. So you would definitely encourage people.
And it's a thing where I really hate to ask this, and it's kind of one of those things where I've seen where people will go through and this charity walk. I've never used it before, but I've seen where people will go through and they'll ask for donations to help with certain goals, and I'm afraid that my online presence is too small. And it'd be one of those things where I would put a call out requesting for people to try to get to that $40 donation. So I just mentally just kind of told myself, I'll just pay it myself. I'll do the miles and I'll do the donation too. And, you know, to help out. But if I were to go through and post that, if I could ask you to share it with whatever you feel comfortable with. I mean, the Schwarzenegger group that you have has blown up, you know,
yeah.
and if we can get, you know, if we can get 80 people to do 50 cents, we make the goal. And so I'll go through and I'll list that on Facebook. And if you could share it, I would be eternally grateful to try to get us a little bit towards that goal.
I'd be honored to share it. Send it to me in a personal message or an email as well, because sometimes Facebook makes it difficult to share things. So if in addition
sure.
to when you share it, send me an email or a PM,
I will be honored to share. That is an awesome thing you're doing.
I appreciate that. And I know it's, you know, this generation that's coming up, the generation that my kids are a part of, they are tremendously charitable when it comes to this online crowdsourcing, far more so than I think the generations that come before them are. And if we could go through and do that, and even if it's just, you know, to get to that $40 to help these victims out, I mean, you never know who it's going to reach. And so your reach is far greater than mine. To do that, I really would appreciate it if you help.
I'd be
honest. Not helping me. The money doesn't go to me. It's going to go directly to the Community Crisis Center. And Facebook arranges all that. So, yeah, if you could do that, that would be just absolutely fantastic.
And when is this happening again? It's happening in August.
It is happening. I'd have to go through and pull it up, but I do know it's sometime later on, later in the month, in August. So I know I've got plenty of time to get my 40 miles in, and I'm going to continue to go through and update my progress as far as the number of miles that I'm doing. So we've still got plenty of time. So I'll get that information to you just as quickly as I can.
And if on your next show you want to invite somebody from the organization that's doing this, you can interview them, and then they would have a recording that they can make through a link available to anybody who wants to listen to what they're all about.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I can try to do. I'm going through here and doing the list. I don't see just right offhand when the actual – when the actual walk is going to take place, but what they're saying here is that it's run or walk 40 miles by August 31st. So we've still got plenty of time to make that happen.
So yes, most certainly. So let's talk about this. Let's work on it together, and let's try to give it as much of exposure as we possibly can.
That would be fantastic, and for donations to flood in from across the country. To help out the people here in northeastern Oklahoma, I think that would be absolutely fantastic.
That would be awesome, yes. That would be phenomenally awesome. All right, a new adventure. And unfortunately, we've reached the end of our time together. We have a couple more minutes. If you can share your contact info, and if you have in front of you a little bit more info on that run for the charity, feel free to share that as well.
So it's one of the things. So what they're doing, it's called the Crisis Community Center. It's the 40 Mile Club. So they're asking that you run or walk 40 miles by August 31st. And then they go through it, and they're going to you keep a log and track your miles. So they're asking to raise or donate at least $40 for CCC. Each $40 raised will provide 2 nights of emergency shelter for a local victim or their child. And so they're saying you can ask family or friends to pledge towards each mile that you run, donate yourself, or set up a Facebook fundraiser, which will be one of the first things that I do hopefully tomorrow.
Awesome.
Well, thank you very much for offering me this forum. I'm surprised. I'm getting older, and it's kind of one of those things where I don't cry because I'm sad. I cry because things are beautiful. And so to go through and help someone like that, it does. It swells my heart. I really didn't think I was going to get emotional here talking about it, but it's a cause that I feel very strongly for, and I'd love to be able to help this organization out.
And I'd love it if through our conversations, people could be helped, and through our social media, people could be helped. That is an awesome thing you're doing, Ryan, and thank you for inviting us all to do the awesome thing in this.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, they just warned me we have 60 seconds. So thank you again, Ryan. I always look forward to our talks, and I'm looking forward to our next one, and I'm looking forward to interacting with you to make things happen. Thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you called in, whether you clicked on a link, or whether you'll be joining us later on demand. This is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And I'm going to close with Golden Bough by Virginia Ackley. Thank you.
Words of the wise, time stood still.